Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2, MR2, and I'm here around or at or whatever the virtual kitchen table having another beautiful day in my consciousness, and you know who's with me.
Hey guys, this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton, and it's another beautiful day in my consciousness here in Durham, North Carolina.
And this is the Reverend Doc Bill Holton, also at the Durham end of the table, and it's very definitely another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness as well. And as you guys know, Cher and I are the co-founders of our Unity Ministry, and our name is the Unity Center for UniversalProsperity.org, and we spell universal, Y-O universal, because it's about your human happiness and spiritual growth.
And we're excited to tell you, you can quickly find us at ucfyp.org or .com. You can get to us either way.
Dot something or other.
Yeah, that's right.
And then .. I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where you can find my calendar and my doings. And of course, the absolute word. So here we are. We're on part three. We are exploring this article, Why Facts Don't Change Our Minds and Beliefs Are So Hard to Change, and is written by Emid Bhattacharya. I guess that's close enough, isn't it, Cher?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, you want to get the ball rolling?
Sure. We're going to pick up where we left off with our last show. We're going to start with a new topic that he talks about, which is causality and the ignorance gap, which is actually causation versus correlation.
Big topic.
Yeah. So let's talk about what he says here first, and then we'll take it from there. The Gormans also argue, and the Gormans are the researchers that he was talking about in the earlier part of the article. They argue that humans are not comfortable with the, quote, ignorance gap, or not knowing why certain events happen. And just as an aside, I like to say that we are meaning-making people, and we like to give meaning, find meaning in things, whether it's there or not.
If there's a gap, we will fill it with our own thoughts and feelings.
Right. And we used to have a saying in corporate, in the absence of information, people will make it up.
Yeah, exactly. And for after all these decades, people still don't believe that.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. So he goes on to say, thus, the human brain, which is hardwired to find and recognize patterns in our environment, tends to assign causality based on an event that follows another event.
Yes. So it's based on the association of two unrelated events.
Right. The proximity.
Yes.
Of those events.
Yes.
And he uses the example of a student who uses a special fountain pen to answer an exam and gets a good score. And so he then goes on and uses it on another exam and gets another good score. So eventually starts thinking that fountain pen is a lucky pen, and that they want to make a cause and effect. And we think about sports. Athletes do this all the time. Say the lucky underwear, the socks,
right?
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, the lucky underwear they're not cleaning.
Right. Yes, it makes you wonder. That's why people stay away. So in reality, the student might just have studied well for both exams.
Yes.
But nevertheless, the student believes that what caused his good grades is the pen and not the good study habits.
Yeah.
And you know where this can get you in trouble is you then don't. It puts it out there from a spiritual point of view, a metaphysical point of view. It puts it all out there instead of coming from within you, causing it, creating.
Absolutely. And the author summarizes this in two sentences. The brain has a tendency to establish causality. The brain has a tendency to establish causality. And then the intense desire to find causality can make people abandon rational thinking.
Happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So irrationality reigns in the absence of information, right?
And I guess we would just encourage our listeners, because it's easy to see this in other people, but we don't always recognize it in ourselves. So start looking at what you're calling cause and effect and ask yourself, is this really cause and effect, or is it just two things happening close together?
Yes.
You know, allowing yourself to assess your own situations.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then the author goes on to say, to prove causality, one must observe the counterfactual, the condition of what would have happened that would make an experiment yield different results. So I put this another way. If someone says something is so, like a law or whatever, I'm looking for a good example of the exception to that law. And if there's an exception to it, then for me, it's not no longer a law. It's a rule. It generally happens, but not all the time.
Exactly.
Right. Right. That's exactly. Interesting because it can also make you sound cantankerous with people, probably. Right.
Well, people have noticed that about me.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, let's talk about that for a minute, because it is a tendency to do that. I think we all probably have a tendency to want to say, well, that's not always the case.
Yeah.
But then it's frustrating when you're trying to prove when you're trying to discuss something that a person would pick the most far out possible situation that could be the exception and recognize that, okay, it is an exception. You're right. But what are the chances of that versus everything else?
Yeah. So when I'm doing that, when I'm the one finding the one example, it's usually not an outlier. Usually something that people could identify themselves, but just haven't thought of it in the moment. Because those outliers, you know, what if? Well, yeah, dealing with what if just doesn't work very well.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, recognizing where am I using that maybe I get myself in thinking trouble, you know, like I don't want to change a belief. So I will use that far out outlier reasoning that keeps me from opening my mind to something new.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. The Gormans go on. They're talking about scientific processes. Now, our listeners know the three of us are really founded on science. Scientific processes established more structured and rigorous ways of establishing causality, such as empirical research. So, big fancy words. What's empirical research? Empirical research is based on observed and measured phenomenon and derives knowledge from the actual experiences rather than from theory or belief. And of course, where we get in trouble is that a lot of the things that we talk about metaphysically are in the belief realm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've talked about that a good bit, is how the thing you want scientific proof, but there are some things that we are not in a position to be able to test and prove.
Yes.
And it really does go back to self-report and experiential things you've had happen, and you can't deny your own experience.
Exactly.
And that's why scientists, true scientists, value replication.
Yes.
Because that tells you that your belief about something actually has scientific documentation behind it.
Yeah, it's replication of the experiment, not right. Replication of the species.
Right.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, so to prove, go ahead, Cher.
I was just going to say, and true scientists are the ones who don't throw out or eliminate people from a research study because those people are going to interfere with the result they want to get.
Oops.
Yes. So they go on to say, to prove causality, one must observe the counterfactual, the condition of what would have happened that would make an experiment yield different results. But since this is impossible to observe, scientists approximate counterfactual conditions by setting up controlled randomized trials. And I'm having this feeling, it's like, ruh-roh, I think we're getting into the weeds here a little bit.
Yes.
I guess the important point here to take away is that there's experiential stuff, and then there's proven science where they have truly tried to come up with actual facts. And facts, even facts, are becoming hard, as this whole article is about. People just don't have that open mind to review things that go against a belief they already have.
Well, because there are evidence-bearing beliefs versus evidence-based beliefs, it could take years and decades of science then investigating that to come up with the truth about that particular belief. So that's what it takes so long sometimes for scientific verification.
Yeah. So Gorman and Gorman, who we talked about a little earlier, say the difference between how scientists establish a cause and the intuitive way in which a human brain connects random events together explain why there is a disconnect between the average person's and scientists' approach to causality. And why sometimes the public expresses doubts on scientists' knowledge. Boy, we had a whole pandemic of that, didn't we?
Literally.
about the stuff around COVID and then the stuff around the vaccines. And I'm still reading someone gets sick and they think it's from the vaccine. Yeah.
Unfortunately, what happened the last 3 years, as you're referring to, guys, is that a lot of people's panned science by their beliefs and what was happening with the COVID experience that we all went through. So that was unfortunate.
Yeah.
Sure was. Yes.
Definitely.
So are we ready to move on to this next subsession?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Cher.
Emotions and assessing risk.
Oh, so my gosh. As soon as you bring up emotions and feelings, we are in a world of trouble.
Yeah.
And as they say, yet another reason why people jump into faulty thinking patterns is a lack of understanding of risk and probability. People tend to dismiss the risk of doing everyday activities like taking a bath or driving, while underestimating large ones that are unfamiliar and they don't have control over, like vaccines we talked about, or nuclear radiation. Psychologists, behavioral economists, and neuroscientists call this tendency the nonlinear estimation of probability.
Yeah, and before the program, we talked about how I was going to go out and buy my Mega Millions ticket, because the rationalization is someone's got to win.
Right. And the nonlinear estimation of probability.
Yes.
Yeah. So in an ideal setting, plotting out the estimation and the probability of risk will result in a straight line, which is why it's called the linear estimation of probability. In other words, and here they explain it in English.
Yeah.
The greater the chances of a bad event happening, the greater the perception of risk. Okay, the greater the chance of bad event happening, the greater perception of risk. However, experiments have found that in real life, the way humans assess risk is nonlinear. Small probabilities had higher than expected risk perception, and high probabilities had unexpectedly lower risk perception.
Why don't we say that again? Because that is really important.
Yeah.
Small probabilities had higher than expected risk perception by humans, and high probabilities had unexpectedly lower risk of perceptions by human beings. So in a way, in our minds, we're leveling them out when they're not level.
Right. Exactly. That's why people say, well, you got a better chance of, or more of a chance of being in a car accident than a plane crash.
Yep.
And yet, you know, we always assess more risk to one than the other. People don't not drive.
Yes. So he goes on to say, risk theorists have noted that emotions and affective judgments are involved in calculating risk probabilities. So Sharon, I'm remembering, I think it was in a previous show, we talked about communications having words with three syllables or greater.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think we've overdone it. So this affective judgment. So an affective judgment is defined as judgments about the overall pleasure / displeasure, enjoyment, and feeling states expected from enacting an activity. I'm going to say this again because it's pretty packed.
Yeah.
Affective judgment. That's AFF. Effective judgment is defined as judgments about the overall pleasure or displeasure enjoyment and feeling states expected from enacting an activity. So that's the affect people get from this. And if it's a good affect, hooray. And if it's a bad affect, they want to stay away from it. But it's all guesswork.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's take a little just discussion about how this impacts why beliefs are so hard to change.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Like, why is this an important piece of that?
Well, so a good example is going back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago about vaccines. So there are risks of side effects with vaccines. So that's the bottom line. But the risks have been measured or calculated by all the other experiments they did or trials they did. But a person will overemphasize the side effects, and that's their reason for then not getting the vaccine. But the chances of getting it are very, very slim. And it's pretty much right along the line, which you were sharing a minute ago, Cher, about an airplane is statistically safer to fly in than an automobile. But people overemphasize the thing about flying and underestimate the risks of an accident or something in a car. Is that making sense?
Yes.
And also, I want to have an addendum on vaccines. On the other hand, people take pills, medications, and if you've listened to commercials advertising those medications, how many of the items are listed as to the after effects of taking that particular pill, the side effects?
Yeah.
And yet just the opposite happened, as Paul was mentioning, on the vaccines.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because we justify in our own mind, we create the power of like they're saying here, we create how risky it is to justify our decision that we're making.
Right. Yeah. It's either higher risk because we don't want to do it, or lower risk because we want to do it. And we're at risk of running over. So it's time for us to pivot to the absolute word. And this one comes from Sunday, July 16th, 2023. And the word is reflection. Upon reflection, I am the light of the world. I love that. Sometimes I write these and I'm going, it's okay. But this one I really love. Upon reflection, I am the light of the world. God is principle that is made up of an infinite number of principles, including dominion and omnipresence. It is the non-changeable realm that is the basis of the entire changeable realm, both physical and non-physical. It cannot be seen, tasted, or touched, but it can be perceived and discerned by anyone's consciousness. Principle is the resource I use for manifesting myself and the life I live. If I ever doubt the presence of principle, upon reflection, I need only behold the world around me and remember that principle is the starting point and the raw material for everything. My ideas, dreams, and all that I do are some of the ways I express principle. Living from my divinity, living from my awareness of principle, I am the light of the world. Upon reflection, I am the light of the world. And I'm just going to repeat a sentence here because it's the clearest I think I ever wrote about this. It is the non-changeable realm, the realm of principles, that is the basis of the entire changeable realm. So every last thing that changes is based on principle. Things that don't change are principle. And so I hope that is helping our listeners understand at least my point of view. And so that's it. Thank you for listening. This is Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck saying happy trails to you.
And this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holt saying enjoy those trails every single day.
And this is the Reverend Doc Bill Holton saying that the three of us invite you to always remember that you are the light of the world.